This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey guys, it's Grant Paulson. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast. We're changing things up. We're going to be making the show available for you 1 hour at a time. So if you're looking for a specific part of the hour of a show, look below at the description of what we've been talking about for time cues.
It's Danny. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you live on the radio from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. weekdays on 106.7 The Fan.
I'm Grant. He's Danny. This is The Fan. And just after noon, thanks to a Pete Medhurst update, we are back. We are better than ever. We are ready to get to your Beltway Blitz with our boy Slasherini. Chris Russell, Redskins insider. We're about to ask fans how much a win would mean to them this weekend. Do they care that much if the Redskins win? What's your take on that?
You should care that they win, because an 8-8 record, even though Jay Gruden kind of dismissed that, I believe it was on Friday before the Arizona game, I think is somewhat important. I think it's important for, you know, the good karma, the feeling that, you know, if you can get a win this week and somehow get a win next week to wrap up the year at the Giants, who you should beat. You know, it kind of validates that you didn't give up, that you fought to the end, that your players did not quit on your coach. And, you know, I strongly believe that this regime cannot do anything to the head coach for many reasons. And so I think a win kind of helps bolster that and validate all of that.
Russell, will they win this game? Denver's got a terrific defense, even though they've been banged up and they've given up some points on occasion when they've maybe quit because their offense stinks. But that's the other side of this. Their offense stinks. It's like another version of this Arizona game to me. How do you feel about the matchup?
Right. But their offense actually, I mean, as long as Osweiler, you know, plays something close to what he did last Thursday night against Indianapolis, which I know is another atrocious defense, but I mean, who are we kidding? It's not like the Redskins are better than Indianapolis, but it's not like they're egregiously better than Indianapolis. If Osweiler is on, and if they don't touch him, and if they don't get pressure on him like they got on playing Gabbert on Sunday, you know, then they could be in for a long day. But certainly they should be able to move. They should be able to hold serve at the very minimum, I would think, on defense. Now, can they score on this offense? Look, I don't know. I mean, you know, probably not. I probably would not expect more than 17 points, if we're being honest. I mean, Kirk obviously has been more, you know, managing the offense the last couple of weeks without, you know, Chris Thompson in the lineup and with some other things going on. They need to run the football better. We talk about that every week. Yeah. And the only way you can be effective against this Denver team is to not be one-dimensional. So I know we battle about this all the time, but if they are trying to throw the ball 35, 40 times, they're going to be in trouble, because we all know what kind of pass rush that team has, led, of course, by Von Miller.
Three Pro Bowlers, Trent Williams, left tackle, Brandon Scherff, right guard, and Ryan Kerrigan coming off the edge at outside linebacker. Alternates, Zach Brown at inside linebacker and Josh Norman at corner. Any surprises there? What'd you think?
You know, I thought Kerrigan, for the large part of the year, was their best offensive player. You know, Williams, as banged up as he is and has been really all year, is certainly their best offensive lineman overall. And still, I mean, if you believe Pro Football Focus's measures and metrics, you know, he's just been outstanding, which, you know, that's no surprise. And then Scherff was dominant before he got hurt. Now, since he's come back, and you go kind of back to that Minnesota game where he got blown up for a late sack and got blown up on a 4th-and-1, I think he's been spotty at best. But overall, his reputation is very good, made it last year, and he was very, very, very good when healthy.
Russell, you've got a reputation. It always holds up. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it.
Thank you, fellas.
Talk to you soon. Let's talk Wizards, please, Tommy. We bring on Nick Handsome. He goes by Nick Ashew, which we all think is a mistake. Talks Wizards. You see him on NBC Sports Washington here on 106.7 The Fan. Nick, this Mike Scott thing, what a godsend he has been. As Markieff Morris has gone through these, don't give a crap moments, and he actually was decent last night, but Mike Scott has been unbelievable. Give Ernie credit for that signing. Where would they be without him?
First off, I need to not overlook the fact that you once again are still trying this Handsome thing, and I really wish you would just stop, but that's okay. I'll let you get away with it this one time. Look, Mike Scott is somebody that was kind of overlooked by a lot of Wizards fans when he was signed this offseason. I mean, he was a good role player in Atlanta. He had some moments, but most people didn't really think about it. And five of his last six games, he scored in double figures. Three of those has been 22 or more points. He's been tremendous. He brings a lot of toughness to this team. He brings a lot of intensity. And look, he's one of those guys that doesn't need to be in those moments where if he has it, like last night where DeMarcus Cousins was trash-talking him, said his ISO was weak, Drew Holiday stripped the ball from him next time down the court, Mike Scott's feeling it. He feels good, and he goes up and knocks down that shot and then kind of laps at Cousins on the way back. I mean, when you have players like this coming off your bench that play this way, I mean, sometimes it takes a while for teams that have a bunch of new faces on the roster, which the Wizards technically do when it comes to their bench. It takes a little bit of time for guys to sort of get integrated, find their roles, for coaches to find the right roles and, spots for them. And they're starting to find that, it looks like, with Mike Scott.
Kelly Oubre got to play 30 minutes last night. Fairly rare. Obviously, Otto Porterless means we'll see more of him. How did we think he performs?
I mean, I love Oubre's development. There's no question. I think there's still some ups and downs with him at times. But, the thing that I always hated last year was the fact that, you had Bojan Bogdanović sort of take away a lot of his minutes, take away a lot of his chances to develop and be a better player. I mean, his defense is good. It was his offense that needed some of the work, and you can see more of the confidence. You can see Oubre now getting to the rim, making some aggressive plays there. He's somebody, look, it's not like he's ever lacked confidence, let's be honest, guys. I mean, the guy's got his own fashion line starting. You see the way he dresses. He's not shy, but you're starting to see more of that on the court from him now overall, and we're going to have ups and downs as the season goes on with him still. He's still really young, but Oubre is a big part of this team. He has to be because they can't afford to bring in any other big name. Like, their young guys that aren't on big contracts are the guys that are going to have to develop with them moving forward because they're locked into Porter and Wall and Beal long-term now.
Nick, thank you, buddy, as always, but I appreciate the time.
All right, fellas.
We will see you soon. Thomas, I want to talk hockey. And I want to talk about it with you, my friend. Tom Daly crashes the net every Tuesday, usually at 6:30 with Neil Greenberg of the Washington Post. Let's get into it, man. A little Burakovsky action. That was a breath of fresh air, yes?
Yeah, thank goodness. It was about time. And actually, on last night's episode of Crashing a Net, which you'll be able to hear later today on iTunes if you missed it, Neil actually said that that third line was going to be an X factor in that game where, when you looked at the Dallas Stars roster, besides them up the center, their wings were very, very weak when you got down to the bottom six, and that it was going to be a big piece of the puzzle that you were going to have Eller, Burakovsky, and Connolly back together. And Berkey really took advantage of the big opportunity.
Two goals, 3 points, overtime winner. He was fantastic. Hey, catastrophe averted. Caps fans were all crying for the last week because Nathan Walker left and got claimed off waivers. He's back.
Yeah, breaking news. The Caps just claimed Nathan Walker, the first Australian player in the NHL, and I believe also because of that, the first NHL player from Australia to score a goal. Easy for me to say. And, he's back. So, you know what? Crisis averted. We don't need to worry about Devontae Smith-Pelly. We don't need to worry about Alex Chiasson anymore. Chandler Stephenson can go back down the Hershey. It's the Nathan Walker show once again.
Give me the official Thom Daily assessment of another Thom, old Thom Wilson. Mm-hmm. What have you seen, and do you feel that the time has arrived for an official apology from Crashing the Net to Tommy Wilson?
You know, this wouldn't be the first apology that we've had to issue. A couple years ago, we had to do that for Jay Beagle when he was about 75% positive inside the faceoff circle that year, the Winter Classic year, where he was just absolutely incredible. And Tom Wilson right now is really starting to make a name for himself and really start to make the guys that projected him to be this 30-goal scorer and this guy that was going to be a solid top-six player, he's really starting to show that maybe those guys weren't crazy. Maybe there is something there. And he really has jumped into the opportunity of playing with the big boys, as I said last night, where when it seems like when he gets with Ovechkin and Backstrom, he goes to another level. which is something that you usually don't see when he's on the fourth line, where he's worried about checking, he's worried about standing up for his teammates. But when he gets an offensive opportunity, he's able to take some shots, make sure the shot attempts are in the Caps' favor when he's on the ice, and he's really been playing great.
Good to see him throw fists last night, taking up for TJ Oshie as well. Crashing the Net on Tuesdays. Listen to Tom and Neil Greenberg. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you.
That is your Beltway Blitz. Does a win this weekend for the Redskins matter to you? Will a win improve how you feel about the team? That is the question next on Grant and Danny. The Redskins play the Broncos on Sunday. Christmas Eve football. Welcome back, Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Man, that would sound better if this was a game with some playoff ramifications, as the last two holiday seasons.
Chicago was a Christmas Eve game last year, wasn't it?
It was.
That game mattered. It was fun.
We enjoyed it.
The Redskins forced turnovers from Matt Barkley every other possession, put up 40-some points.
Kirk Cousins and their offense dominated the Bears. They ran all over the place. The best running back in Redskins history, Mac Brown, had the one big run of his career in that game, you may remember. Broke one off. Went the distance. Your boy, Mac Brown.
Oh, Mac Brown.
I believe that's when everyone was sold on him, right?
No, it was before then. Everyone knew that Mac Brown could play. Yeah, everyone knew.
Oh,
you could
okay.
see that Mac Brown could play. Just needed his chance.
It's very exciting.
Just needs a chance is all.
I just loved all the interceptions in that game.
Matt Barkley's going to throw a pick.
Even Josh Norman caught the balls that hit him in the hands in that game.
I bet he went 1 for 7 in terms of balls he could have picked off.
Did
but
he
whatever.
Pick off 2 in that game? Breland had 2. I think they had 5. DeShazer Everett maybe had 1.
That sounds right. I'm sure there was a linebacker in there.
Mason was, Foster.
Matt Barkley is and was terrible. Never forget, was it him they said he's the LeBron James of quarterbacks?
I think
Was that Jimmy the Pickle Clawson was the LeBron James of quarterbacks?
Oh, that was the Mel Kiper call that Jimmy Clawson was going to be that dude.
Because he's like friends with Jimmy Clawson's agent.
Something
and no one ever
like
talked
that.
About it.
You want some Broncos stats?
Stat me up,
as we
bro.
Look ahead to this weekend. Here you go. Offense. You want to go offense, defense first? What do you want to do?
Let's do offense first because the numbers won't take that long to read because they're low.
Yards per play. Out of 32 teams, they rank, take a guess.
30th.
29th. Rushing yards per play, they are 19th. Passing yards per play, they are 26th. Easiest team to intercept, 30th out of 32. Only two teams throw interceptions at a more alarming rate than Denver. Sacks per pass attempt. Can you get to their quarterbacks? Oh, you betcha.
I bet you can, yeah.
26-32. Yeah, could be a get-right game again for the pass rushers on this team. I'm going to pick a very similar game to Arizona, by the way. Redskins probably going to win ugly, and they're going to do it because their defense is going to benefit from awful offense against them, and they're going to make a few plays. Denver is 27th in terms of field goals made. They are 13th in third down percentage, believe it or not, the best category they've got in anything. They're 27th on fourth down. They're 30th in red zone offense. They're 30th in goal-to-go offense. They're 24th in scoring. This is a terrible offense. Now, when you play the Broncos, you do generally play a really good defense. There's a lot of scuttlebutt that they're not good on defense anymore. That is a little bit misleading. You want some defensive numbers?
Give me some.
They rank number one in the NFL in yards per game, which is the metric a lot of people use. I use yards per play.
Where they're second.
Second in that. They are second in rushing. They are 12th in passing defense. They are 23rd best at intercepting passes. They're top 12 in generating sacks. They are second best in the league at not allowing first downs or ball movement, which is a pretty good thing. If you look at how they rank on red zone, 29th. So when you get inside the 20, you can generally score. They're great down around the goal line, though, 6th. Their scoring defense is 20th, and they are 6th in yard differential per game.
So they're really good on defense.
Yeah, you cannot really move the ball well on them consistently. So if you're going to beat Denver, you better try to score 20, and you better not allow more than 17 or so.
So they only allow 3.3 yards per attempt in terms of rushing the football. That's just Sterling. That is out bleeping standing. It's them, Jacksonville, and a couple teams that are in that kind of ilk. Last year, that, by the way, was their secret weakness. They were still great against the pass because that, you know, that no-fly zone, whatever you call that group of, you know, Harris, Aqib Talib, the good safeties, et cetera.
Still got those guys. Chris Harris, yep. Great. Aqib Talib, great.
Still able to rush the passer, Von Miller and company. But last year, their sneaky weakness was they couldn't stop the run. Well, they improved a little bit internally after they lost Malik Jackson last year, and they had some other guys develop. long and short, they're really good on defense, but their offense bones them. Their offense puts them in bad spot after bad spot after bad spot, kills them, no drives, etc. So they've given up more points than they're used to seeing a Denver defense give up, just in terms of per game and kind of the ins and outs. They've given up almost 100 more points, for example, than the Minnesota Vikings have. But the overall numbers tell you that down in, down out, you don't move the ball so good against
right.
them.
You can score some points. You take advantage of short fields. You get in the red area after a turnover like the Redskins did with the Preston Smith pickup of a Anthony Lanier sack fumble. You might be able to turn that into a touchdown against them. But you're not driving 85 and 90 yards at a time against this defense. It's just not going to happen. This is also the best cornerback group that Josh Doctson, Jamison Crowder, Maurice Harris, and the Redskins receivers like Ryan Grant have faced in several weeks. Probably the best cornerback group Kirk Cousins will face this season. Chris Harris, you mentioned, is considered one of the best corners in football. Aqib Talib in his career as a pick six against Kirk Cousins has had some success against Washington, was great in New England for a long time, and is still a very good player. And Bradley Roby doesn't get talked about a whole lot, but he's a first-round pick who's become a good NFL corner as well. They're deep. They got three guys who can all shut receivers down. Roby is not a starter again, mostly their third corner. But that's a guy who's defended 16 passes this year. You look around at the Redskins' defense for 16 passes defended, you may not find it. That's their third best corner. So if you're Cousins, you got to normally locate where one guy is. Okay, he's on that side of the field, so I'll go. Where do you work? Do you go at one of the best corners in the league, Harris? Do you go at Aqib Talib, who makes a lot of plays, old school D'Angelo Hall style? Do you go at Roby, who's good in the slot? That's the problem when you face Denver. The good news I would pass along is their defensive line is not what it used to be. Because Derek Wolfe, who's a really good, terrific pass rusher, is not a factor right now, not going to be on the field. They lost Malik Jackson to Jacksonville, not coincidentally now all of a sudden one of the better defensive lines in the league with him and Calais Campbell. But the guy that's huge for them is the big, I think he's of Samoan descent,
Pecco.
The big hairy guy from the Bengals, D'Amato Pecco, who's got the huge beard and the hair that comes all the way down the 94 in his jersey.
Just a mess.
He is so hard to move. And he's, by the way, he is the guy who just, they're always, for whatever reason, the Redskins can't block. Just figure that out. They cannot move that guy around. Right. He just stands over the center and shuts down their running game.
Yeah, so you've got the undersized center that's athletic for the Mike Shanahan style. That guy just gets blown up. Then you've got whatever the Redskins have now, if it's Cousin Chase Rouye or Spencer Long, whatever. They got no shot against that dude.
Oh, wait, we forgot about Von Miller.
Oh, yeah, by the way.
10 sacks this year. A little bit quiet by his standards.
Yeah, we're used
to that. But Von Miller could still have, like if I told you right now, 3 sacks, a sack fumble, a crippling play in the second half to beat the Redskins, you would say?
Yeah, I see that coming.
Of course.
He goes around Morgan Moses like he's just standing still.
Yeah, all of a sudden you have a 2.5 sack game, you got 12.5 going into the last week, and you're on pace for Von Miller numbers again.
Right. It's not the 20 sack year, but it's the 14. That's not too terrible. That guy's good. I mean, their linebackers are fast. Anyway, point is their defense is good. Their offense stinks.
Right. That's kind of the lay of the land on the Broncos. So here's the question. We'll take your calls next. Danny and I will give you our opinions as well at 800-636-1067. But what we want to hear from you on is, would a win improve how you feel about the Redskins? That's it. Does a win this weekend matter to you and how much? 800-636-1067 on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
Here's what we want you guys to do. What so many Grant and Danny listeners have done, what so many folks in the D.C. area have done.
What have they done?
They've gone to see our pals at EMP 180 Weight Loss.
Ah.
You know what they've done? They've lost a lot of weight. They've gotten a lot healthier. You learn more. I've done things before, Grant, where I like stepped on a scale and I'd have gained a half pound. And you're kind of like, what the heck happened? Well, now I know more. Where when I go to EMP 180 Weight Loss, I may gain a little bit of weight, but I can tell what kind of weight it is. I've gained muscle, and that's actually fine. They have the technology and the guidance to help you meet your fitness goals.
You got to set goals, check on those goals. You got to be consistent. Attitude is everything, and they're going to control all of that for you. They make this so easy. They are going to get you to your desired weight week by week. Take out that shovel and dig with them. That's what we did, and they will do it with you this holiday season's a good time to get started. I started last December. I'm a year into my lifestyle change. Lost over 70 pounds. 855-888-0180. That's the number. 855-888-0180. Or go to emp180weightloss.com.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Would a Redskins win on Sunday on Christmas Eve matter to you? That is the question. Hadid Carpet Cleaning listener lines open, 800-636-1067. Richmond John is joining us in studio at the top of the show.
He did.
Tweeting in saying, I definitely think the last two games matter, if only for continuity's sake. Kirk mentioned it on your show. Monday, it matters to the coaches and players, and hopefully it will force the front office's hand, embrace continuity. And this is kind of where I'm at. You want players to be rewarded for their hard work, not necessarily for some feel-good pat on the back, but because you want it to matter that they remember early next season, hey, Jay Gruden told us in week 16 last year, here's the plan, here's what we're going to do, go out and execute, and you're going to beat this team. And it worked because it adds and instills extra belief in the process. It adds to if our boss, CK, saying, do these three things, and I promise you you'll get ratings, and we do those three things and we get ratings, he knows what he's talking about.
He knows what he's doing. That's a good way to put it.
If he tells us all the time, keep doing these things, you'll get ratings, and then you don't, at some point you go, maybe let's try it a different way.
Let's just do our own thing.
And that's what happens in locker rooms all the time. So I think the more you win, the better, culturally. People talk all the time about draft positioning, and there's no such thing as momentum carrying over, and that might be true. But what is also true is that when you get rewarded for doing the right thing, it benefits you in the future because you're more likely to repeat the right thing in the right process. If you do the right things and you're not rewarded, you might do something different. You might make changes to how you go about that process. And the vast majority of this roster, probably about 30 to 35 of the 53 players, will be back next year. So for me, it does matter that the Redskins win. Let's go to Koo in Potomac. What's up, Koo? How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good, man.
Doing well.
Hey, so my point is that you can't tank your way to a championship. Like, it's not like the NBA where you're going to get a two-way player. If you tank for a couple of years, you get, 60% of your roster there. Here in NFL, it's all about winning cultures. And what you want is, in training camp next year, if you're 8-8, you want to be sitting there and thinking, okay, we're 8-8. We had a lot of injuries last year. We had the second hardest schedule. We can have a winning team here. And that's how you build a winning culture there and a winning locker room. You don't want to have a lot of questions. And, losing the last two games, I know they say that it doesn't matter till next year or whatever, but I think if you walk into training camp and you're 500 3 years in a row and you're returning most of that roster with a lot less injuries and stuff like that, you'll feel pretty good about yourself.
I think a lot of that makes sense. I'm not convinced that being 8-8 rather than 6-10 is in any way going to change anything in August for training camp. The things I was just talking about, I think, do matter, and I think it speaks to kind of what he's saying as well. The part of the call I love, we prescribe the same thought to football as other sports just because they're sports.
Right.
Well, if tanking's a good thing in baseball, which it is, by the way, if tanking works in basketball, well, then you should do it in football. And I just couldn't disagree with that more. You don't tank in this sport. Worst to first is too easy, and it happens too often. You don't need to be bad sustainably to be good again. Not to mention, there is talent up and down the draft board in all rounds, and it's less about drafting the best players and more about drafting guys that can fit in your system anyway.
Right. I don't think of it as tanking with football, because you're right. No one should lose games on purpose. That's no one is there in the NFL. I do think long-term planning sometimes doesn't jive with immediacy. In other words, when Mike Shanahan years ago, I know you hate this example, but said, let's have Willie Parker, Larry Johnson, Roydell Williams, and Joey Galloway play, maybe we squeeze out an extra win instead of giving our kids a chance. I'd rather give the kids a chance, if that makes sense.
They didn't have kids to give a chance.
Well, they drafted a couple players that never got a chance, and they turned into punchlines. So, but be that as
they weren't NFL players, but that's my issue with the point. But I get what you're saying.
It's one example out of trillions. With the Redskins, I don't. So as a fan, just watching this team, I will not be moved to emotion if they win. I will not care if they win. If they lose, whatever. I'm fine. This past week was the one where I go, you've had two straight weeks where you've gotten beat by a combined 41 points. The ship is sailing, and it's sailing towards an iceberg. This could be really, really, really bad. You staved that off, so I now go, okay, they can respond. They still will listen to Jay. They'll still listen to Greg Minuski. You pass that test. If you lose a close one here this week, now, if you get the doors blown off by these last two teams, a lot of conversations resurface because you will lose four of your last five games in horrendous fashion. I think that's off the table, though. I think if you lose, fine, whatever. We know the reason why, the injuries, and you're not that good
at this
point.
Just don't look like you did against the Chargers.
Yeah, you just can't look that terrible. But everyone's point from a process standpoint, I think, is right. I'd rather, I guess, them win than they lose to validate, as you said, some of the good behavior. I guess I kind of go as a fan here thinking, if they win this game, I'm not going to be terribly excited. If they lose it, I'm not going to throw stuff at the wall. I did that for Dallas. I did that for San Diego.
Right.
Excuse me, L.A. Damn it, I did it. I screwed
it. It's okay. You're fine.
See, I got that loss. I cared about those. Last week, I cared from a morbid curiosity standpoint, meaning, is this ship going to crash? Is this going to be one of those December to remember events? And it's not.
Let's go to Craig in Manassas on Grant and Danny. We want to know, Redskins fans, how much do you care about a win this weekend?
Hey, boys, it's been a while. So you guys already know, not a Redskins fan, but I was actually at that Cardinals game, and I can tell you a lot of the people in there, their reaction was, yeah, we won, but we barely beat a Cardinals team that is just, you know, horrible. I think it matters on the way you guys win. You know, the Broncos, they're still an okay team. I know the record doesn't say it, but their defense has still got some key players. Mm-hmm. And DJ Anderson just got done rushing for over 150 yards. You know, he's still a pretty good player in the league. So, you know, if you guys have a dominating win, I think it definitely encourages the fan base. But if it's a bare, you know, win like against the Cardinals, I think people are going to think the same old thing with the Redskins.
And it's a good phone call. Thank you. I think, and I don't want to say it has nothing to do with the fan base, but to me, if you're in the locker room, it's not really about the fans anymore. I mean, you want to go out and you want to show well for the people that are paying to be at that stadium.
Mm-hmm.
For the 23,000 maybe that show up this weekend on Christmas Eve, you do want to reward them. And for the people that are invested and that are waiting on their holiday party because they're going to watch the game on TV, you owe them just playing hard, right? Be a professional, be an adult. I get that. But really, this is about you. This is about your teammates. This is about your coaches. Because such a vast percentage of the fan base as it is, they not necessarily have checked out, but they're kind of over it in some way, even if they're watching.
They have checked out. I mean, the numbers,
some of them
the data tells you that.
Yeah,
attendance,
yeah, absolutely.
And TV ratings.
I don't know that the majority of fans have checked out, but a huge percentage have. But if you're on this team, do it for you. You know, do it for your teammates. Do it for your coaches, the people that you grind with every single day. You know how hard it is to go out there and win. Fans just kind of expect the parade. They expect 11 wins. They expect that you're going to win week in and week out. That's their prerogative. They're allowed to do that. It's a little bit harder than they make it out to be with all the injuries and the schedule and some of the things that came your way. But here's a game you can win. Go take advantage of that. Take advantage of the underbelly of this schedule. Cut this thing open and have some success. It was a good point by Craig on CJ Anderson, by the way. He's 26. He is in his fifth year with the Broncos. He rushed for a 158 last week. Now, somewhat misleading, I guess. It was the Colts who were terrible. And he didn't have a run longer than 16. But he gashed them for like 8 to 12 a ton in that game. 30 for 158. If you go back before that, for his season, he's still not even at 1,000 yards with well over 200 carries right now. He had 67, 12, 37, 54, 13 yards in recent games.
Oh, putrid.
And then he went for 158. So who are the Broncos as a rushing team? Should I be worried about them? Probably not. But if you don't concern yourself some, they can jump up and get you like they did this past weekend.
They certainly can. Again, and it's not as if the Redskins are this stout group. They played well against the run this past week, I thought, for the most part. Nothing huge, even though there were several, you know, prevalent first down runs and a couple guys I've never heard of ran the ball okay. I'm not worried about that because at a certain point, is it Osweiler? Is it Simeon? Is Paxton Lynch this week? Who the hell knows? One of those guys is going to have to beat you, and I'd take my chances there. I certainly would. So CJ Anderson, get a few four-yard carries in. Congratulations. That's awesome. Pat yourself on the back. There's going to be a 3rd-and-7. Win those times. That's what I care about.
Yeah, I think that's well said. The Nats may be in the market to upgrade at an important position and could consider a trade. We'll tell you about that next. Also, a ridiculous goal in the Caps game last night. They have been incredible. Winners of 8 of 9 and now 17 of 22 since the start of November. One of the best teams in hockey all of a sudden. Grant and Danny on the Fan. On Grant and Danny. Well, welcome to the show, Tyler Columbus, former Redskins offensive lineman, who now does radio out in Denver. Of course, he was with the Broncos before he came to Washington, had success with the Skins. So look forward to catching up with him in about 15 minutes right here on G&D. Update on the Nationals. Winter meetings in the rearview mirror. Some news and notes. The Nats struck a minor league deal with Tommy Malone.
Remember him?
Of course. Left-handed pitcher. Was in this organization. Flipped out to Oakland at one point in time. He turns 30 in February. He's going to return to the organization and compete for a starting spot in the back of the rotation. He was originally traded away from Washington when they acquired Gio Gonzalez from the Athletics. Since then, lefty who doesn't throw that hard, thrown about 700 innings in Major League Baseball, spent a few years with the Athletics and the Twins. Most recently, he had pitched at the minor league level. This is your prototypical, very low risk,
yes,
probably very low reward acquisition. This is just something you kind of throw at the wall to see if it sticks.
No downside.
It can't really be your A or B option as a fifth starter, but this is a guy that you bring in and you kick the tires on and you liked him at one point in time, so you just kind of see.
Yeah. You know the player, you know the guy, you know the makeup. He couldn't break glass with his fastball. You don't care. Can you get outs? Can you get me through 7, 8, 9, 10 starts at some point this year? That's what your organizational number 6 or 7 or 8. Is he more ready than AJ Cole? Is Eric Fetty taking longer to get back from his injury than you'd like, et cetera? Do you want to be cautious with him? You need somebody to eat some of those innings to not overbear your organization. This is a very low downside, smart type thing that the Nats do.
One of my top priorities for the Nationals this offseason is to get close, or as close as you can, to getting an extension in place with Anthony Rendon.
Mm.
I think Bryce Harper's leaving. I've been on record as saying that for over a year now. I just don't think he's staying in Washington. I do, however, think you can build this thing around Anthony Rendon, who you can pay, and Trey Turner, who you can pay, and you can keep the vast majority of this core together. You replace Harper in your outfield ultimately with Victor Robles, different player, but who's got some superstardom potentially to him, and you could still be a very good top-shelf NL East team and organization that has a chance to win titles. This is from trade rumors. Nats third baseman Anthony Rendon was at the Fan Fest this weekend talking with a bunch of the reporters, and I saw what Chelsea Janes and others were tweeting. His quote was, "Why not stay with one organization?" He was asked if he wanted to get an extension in place, and he basically said, "Yeah, I'm open to discussing it." He is advised by Scott Boras. Normally, Boras does not re-up his clients with their teams before free agency, although he did it with Steven Strasburg, so it's kind of a case-by-case basis. Rendon is projected to make $11.5 million this year. Mike Rizzo suggested earlier, going back to last week, that the Nats would be interested in locking up Rendon before he's able to leave, obviously. So it's about showing him the money. This is not a Bryce Harper situation, though. This is a guy that you absolutely can afford. Of course, there'd be a bidding war for him, but we're not talking about $400 or $500 or $600 million. To me, this should be your foremost priority between now and the end of your offseason, and I mean that. Sign Anthony Rendon, and that way, when and if, and I'm saying when, Bryce Harper leaves, you've got your cornerstone at third base who is going to be the face of this franchise.
This is the buyout a couple years of arbitration kind of move, where you'd get a guy more up front at the expense of having a bargain later, right? So that would be the idea. And a player that projects as he does, who he's not a big muscle guy that you think may break down a couple years later. This is not a super speed guy that if he loses his wheels won't be effective for you.
Do you realize he had 25 homers, 100 RBI, and hit 300 this year?
Yep.
Crazy to look back on now. Sixth in MVP voting. Finished top six in MVP voting twice now. He's a lock for 20 and 90, basically, if he's healthy going into the season, Danny. And you mentioned kind of what the thinking would be. He is a second-year ARB-eligible player this year, so that's going to be around that $11.5 million I talked about. Mm-hmm. His earliest free agent season is 2020. So you have two seasons of Rendon left. This one, and then one more, and then he's a free agent.
So you could say, hey, let's give you a big raise in 2019 and even then 2020, right? Or for, you know, the 2018 season will increase at 2019, et cetera, with the idea that as salaries go up down the line, you'll be fairly well compensated, but obviously you're getting more in the short term than you would necessarily in the long if you hold out the free agency, but you get security, certainty, you know where all the roads go in D.C., et cetera. It can be mutually beneficial to both sides. If he's too much of a Boras guy, in other words, nope, you keep putting up 325 seasons playing a premium third base, you'll go earn an outrageous amount in free agency in however many years. It just depends on what the guy wants. Sometimes you get a Strasburg where, yeah, it makes sense to kind of stay in the nest. Other times you get, who knows, the player. So you could certainly see TBD there. But I'm with you. I would start approaching that now if you could.
Another item for the Nats. Brandon Kinstler, as we told you last week, is back. He will pitch in the seventh inning. Madsen likely in the eighth. Doolittle in the ninth. I'm hoping they could make a big splash and bring in a closer like a Wade Davis. And then you could kind of slot everyone in the bullpen down, and all of a sudden you only have to worry about 5 2/3, 6 innings at a time. But what's interesting here is that Kinstler, apparently, according to Mark Zuckerman of MassinSports.com, turned down other offers that were right there with what the Nats offered, where maybe he would have had a higher leverage role. He might have been your true setup man.
How about it?
Gotten some chances to close at a similar amount of money, and he wanted to stay here in Washington where he really liked it. The quote, part of the thing we like most about him is he's about the name on the front of the jersey more so than the name on the back, but he put his money where his mouth is. I mean, that's what Rizzo thought about this guy going into the offseason, and Brandon Kinstler said, I like what the Nats are building. I want to be here. 2 years, $15 million is about what the deal was. Couple-year agreement for $10 million is what we've seen from him. Chance to make about $6 million more in incentives. So this is the kind of smart, easy money to spend on a reliever that's going to be decent for you that makes your team a lot better.
Dependability matters. I think they've learned their lesson with saying, okay, kids, go get it, with the Blake Trinans, the name we always kind of bring up here. In high-leverage roles, I'll take a guy that's walked that tightrope before and emerged unscathed.
Quick shout-out, pivot into the Capitals really quick. Did you see Dmitry Orlov's goal last night?
That's as good a goal as you'll find, especially from a defenseman.
Wow, it was so sick. Just dangling for days. Goes between his legs. I mean, a good defenseman who's a pretty good skater is made to look like a fool. Comes back across the net, goes backhand, forehand.
It's like your N1 remix hockey style.
If you looked up at the last second on Orlov's goal, and you just saw that single number and the way he was bobbing and weaving like a coop through traffic, you'd have thought Alex Ovechkin just scored one of his best goals in a couple of years. That's old school Alex Ovechkin. Mm. That is quote-unquote vintage Ovi. Nope, it was Dmitry Orlov. Just defenseman, Russian skater who's got mad skills. This is why they've always been enamored and loved him. Offensive end, he's got skill. He can skate. He puck on his stick is dangerous. But he's also gotten a lot better defensively.
That's what I care about.
They were right. And Brian McClellan, remember, when he came on our show, just sang Dmitry Orlov's praises. A couple times in a row he came on our show, it was like the Dmitry Orlov reaffirmation.
Yeah, it's the Orlov experience.
He called it, man. He's having a hell of a season.
And I was wrong, of course. Again, I'm a terrible hockey evaluator, as we all know. But
because you would put all of the players on the penalty kill laying across the crease. Remember that?
No, not laying.
Oh, just standing.
Standing in front, so no shots.
Yeah, you would have the entire penalty kill just collapse standing right around the goalie in front, just creating so much traffic and areas for ricochets.
Make a wall like they do in soccer so nothing can get through. I was so over, basically, the Mike Green softness, that sort of stuff, where, yeah, it's fun in the regular season and the, quote, puck-moving defenseman that everybody just loses their pants for. I care about... Please don't get beat to the net by Eric Fair to lose a game to the Pittsburgh Penguins. Please don't turn the puck over in terrible times to lose games to the New York Rangers in the postseason. I care about stay-at-home defense and just playing good playoff defense and praying to God you don't the levy doesn't break. So the fact that he's gotten so much better defensively, is now dependable with the puck moving, they were right, I was wrong.
Your boy Mike Green scored a goal last night.
He'll do that in regular season.
You don't know how many he's got this year.
Mike Green? I'm going to guess Mike Green has 11 goals.
How about 3 goals this year?
Oh, it's not as much as I thought. Yeah.
Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan.
I overshot.
Tyler Palumbis, former Redskin, now doing radio in Denver, covers the Broncos from afar. We'll discuss the team with him next on The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.